Almost all of us walk at some point, but the ways we walk are very varied. I myself like to gun it most of the time, and it is a daily struggle to stop and smell the roses. I wonder if you're a journey person or a destination person, or a bit of both maybe. Writer Nick Gadd and his partner Lynn started an ambitious project a few years ago. They decided to walk a giant circle around the city of Melbourne where they live, doing a section most weekends. And Nick has written about this in a beautiful and informative new book, Melbourne Circle: Walking, Memory and Loss. Welcome to Life Matters, Nick.
Hi, Hilary.
Hi. Now, I understand that walking had always been part of your relationship with Lynn, but what prompted you both to start this particular walking project around Melbourne together?
Well, we'd been living in Melbourne for 25 years, and then we got to the stage where our children had grown up, and we decided it would be fun to rediscover the city and discover parts of it that we had never been to before. Like, I mean, there are all kinds of suburbs that you might hear the names of, but you don't actually know them. So we started this project of kind of randomly going out to different parts of the city, different suburbs, and walking around, looking for things like old buildings, old signage, and anything that grabbed our attention. And after a while, this an idea took hold that we would like to walk around the whole city and see if we could do that in a series of connected walks, which is what we did over 2 years.
And so if you think about a map of Melbourne curling around its bay there, where did you start and where did you end?
We started out in Williamstown, which is fairly close to where we live in Yarraville. And we walked up from Williamstown through Newport, Yarraville, Footscray, round Kensington, Flemington, up as far north as Avondale Heights and across to Essendon. So if you know the geography of Melbourne, this is obviously not a perfect circle. This is a very wiggly circle with lots of loops and doublings back. Then we continued through Collingwood, Fitzroy, Abbotsford, came down through the inner eastern suburbs, Prahran, St Kilda, around as far as Port Melbourne, and then we took a ferry back across under the Westgate Bridge, across the river, back to our starting point to complete the Melbourne Circle.
Wow, you're like an orbital bus, but on foot.
Yeah, that kind of thing, yes. And one that takes the slowest possible route. We weren't, you mentioned before about destinations and the journey. This was very much about the journey. So each of our walks had to begin at the point where the previous one finished, but we didn't have a specific end point in mind. We would, the whole point was to go slowly. There's a concept of psychogeography. Which is about understanding a place at close range by finding out its secrets, and by drifting is the word that psychogeographers like to use, drifting through the streets. So if we saw something that interested us, we would kind of duck down a laneway or round the back of an old building, and it was quite improvisational in that way.
And I love how you took that term from Robert McFarlane, the wonderful UK writer, and really made that term your own.
Well, that's right. So, I mean, psychogeography has been around for a long time, but what we borrowed from Robert McFarlane was he wrote an essay once in which he said, take a glass, put it down on a map, draw a circle around the glass, and then go out into the streets and walk the circle. So that was kind of where the idea came from. Of course, what we ended up with was not really a circle. It was much more wiggly than that. But yes, that was where the idea came from.
And I love how between you two, you referred to it as psycho-jogging. All right, grab your water bottle. We're going psycho-jogging this weekend.
Psycho-jogging, yes. That was our contribution to the genre, that word.
And Nick Gadd, how was walking with someone else different to walking alone? Because for a lot of people, walking is a lovely solitary activity. But you said it really helped bring you back together at one point in your relationship. Why was that?
Well, it did. And there is an extensive literature of walking, which usually involves solitary walkers, whether men or women. They tend to be books that are written by people who go out and walk by themselves. And Robert McFarlane is a perfect example. He's written lots of walking books. They're great, and I love those books. But where our project was a bit different was that Lynn and I, for Melbourne Circle, we would it was a joint project. So we would set out together. One of us would spot something. Like, I'm very interested in ghost signs, which is old signage pointing back to the past. So I might see something like that. Or Lynn might see one. And oh, come on, let's go down here. And so you've got this kind of dialogic process going on. You know, one of you spots something and then the other one does. Rebecca Solnit, the American writer who's also written a lot of walking books, says that no two people live in the same city. You know, you all have your own understanding of the city. And when two of you are walking, it is this kind of joint project. You remember different things as well. You spot different things, you remember different things. And yeah, we found it a more, perhaps a slightly richer process than if it had just been one of us walking alone.
I love too how you and Lynn thought differently about what the ghost signs meant, those faded painted images on walls. You thought they were about mortality, you know, everything passes, but she had a different view, didn't she?
Yes, I mean, so when you see an old piece of signage, yes, you can interpret it in lots of different ways. And one might be to say, well, that product has gone. It doesn't exist anymore. So it's a sign of mortality, whereas Lynn's idea was, no, this is actually a sign that something has survived, something lives on. And I think I find ghost signs to be quite symbolic. I mean, the title of the book, the subtitle of the book is Walking Memory and Loss, and what I'm doing is exploring ideas of what is lost, but also what is preserved and what is renewed.
And it was wonderful to see the detective work that you and Lynn put in too when you started seeing names, for example, on some of these signs. Tell us how you tracked down the information in the book.
Yeah, so if you see an old piece of signage, there was a piece of signage that appeared on a Melbourne wall which said, consult the celebrated specialist Dr. King. And this was a sign dating from the 1890s. And this sign appeared during construction. A building was knocked down and it revealed this old sign. And that's a classic way that ghost signs often appear. And that, to us, was just an invitation to go off and do some research. And there's a marvellous old street directory called Sands and MacDougall, which was published every year in Melbourne from the mid-19th century to the late 20th century, which includes enormous amounts of detail about people who lived at every address. So we were able to find out some information about Dr. King and where his rooms were. We were also able to look on Trove, which is, as listeners will know, the online resource of the National Library, and look up old newspapers. So we could find newspaper advertisements that Dr. King had placed. And we discovered that he, in fact, was something called a medical clairvoyant.
A medical clairvoyant?
A medical clairvoyant. And so you would send him a lock of your hair and or a letter, and he would diagnose what was wrong with you. That was the claim. Anyway, so out of that sign, out of that ghost sign, we were able to do this research, and I was able to write this story about Dr. King, delving into his history and touching on things like the history of medicine in Melbourne, which is, you know, itself was very unregulated at the time of Dr. King.
Yes, indeed.
So that one sign, with a bit of research, which, I mean, and we're not professional historians or anything like that. You know, I'm a writer. So it was quite straightforward to do this kind of research. It just took a little bit of curiosity.
We're speaking with Nick Gadd, author of Melbourne Circle, Walking, Memory and Loss. And he blogs too. You can find his Melbourne Circle writings online as well, with a lot of these stories that we're talking about today. Tell us a little bit more, Nick, about this Sands and MacDougall directory, because I was stunned to hear how they gathered this street by street information about who lived where.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I found out about Sands and MacDougall also through a ghost sign, because there's a big building on Spencer Street in Melbourne which has got the signage of Sands and MacDougall all over it. And so when I saw that, I wanted to know more about who Sands and MacDougall were, and discovered there was a massive printing firm in Melbourne for many, many years until the late 20th century. And they used to do a huge amount of printing. They used to print banknotes and bus tickets and stationery, letterhead, books. They printed everything, but perhaps their most lasting legacy was these extraordinary street directories of every householder at every address in Melbourne, which they collected this information every year. And they had teams of people who would go out knocking on doors and, okay, so here we are at number 25 Ackland Street, you know, and Mrs. Smith lives here. And then all of this would be recorded every year. So these books are amazing resources. It means that essentially you can find out who lived at any address in Melbourne in any year up to about 1975, which is when they stopped doing it, because then telephone directories had come in and supplanted Stanza McDougall. But these books are an extraordinary resource, yes.
Yeah, and just the designations for the professions that people had that you know, were unintelligible to us today. CKS turned out to mean cakes. She made cakes at this address.
Yeah, pastry cooks. Yes, I mean, yes, it would also link people's occupations. And these books would also be full of the most beautiful printed advertising. And I've got, I looked at the collection in the Bailey Library at Melbourne University, but they also have them at the State Library of Victoria. And I bought an edition of Stanza McDougall from 1946, which I found on eBay, which some bloke had discovered under his carport when he was doing renovations. So I imagine there are still copies of these books lying around in cupboards and in basements in attics, and they really are a snapshot of the city and regional Victoria as well in the year that they were printed.
One thing that was really fascinating from reading your book, Melbourne Circle, Nick, was that the way the local memory can endure even when things disappear from the city memory, and that north, south or east, west divide is still very much evident, isn't it? When you looked at this ghost racetrack that you found out west, the locals knew it was there and everyone else thought you were crazy.
I'm not sure if the locals still know it was there now, but certainly the older residents would remember it. So it was a greyhound racing track that was in Tottenham up until around about the 1950s, and it was there for some 30 years, I think, and used to be a really popular location where people would go and bet on the greyhounds.
White City.
And then a factory was built on the spot. And if you look at aerial photographs of Melbourne, you can see the little greyhound racing track. And it had its own station. It was called White City. The track was called White City. The station was also called White City. And the station survived for longer than the greyhound racing track did. But, yes, Lynn and I walked out there and sort of tried to get a sense of whether we could still hear the shouting of the crowd. But it was really quite exotic, because they also had, and this is one of the things that really appealed to me about it, was they actually had these quirky kind of races, like they had greyhounds with monkeys riding on their backs as a novelty race. And when I first read about this, I thought, no, that can't possibly be true. You know, monkeys riding on greyhounds. But I found some photographs in the Argus, which was a Melbourne newspaper of the 1930s. And yes, sure enough, there they are. It really happened. So yeah. You uncover these kind of odd, quirky little historical stories.
Capuchin monkeys trained to be jockeys. I nearly fell off my chair when I read that. I wonder too, Nick, you've got these lovely asides in there from Lynn in italics, the comments that she made about some of the things you two discovered. What did you talk about when you were ambling around this massive circle?
Yes, well, I suppose I should mention at this point that Lynn died in 2018 of cancer, which happened after we'd completed our walk. So one of the things about this book is that it's also about my memories of Lynn and my memories of our relationship. And so the subtitle, Walking Memory and Loss, I'm talking about personal loss as well as the losses that take place in cities. And so through the book, I've kind of written some of my memories of the relationship that Lynn and I had in specific places in Melbourne, and also the kind of memories that I have of us living in other places like Italy. So because I suppose one, you could say the argument of the book, if it has an argument, an underpinning idea anyway, is that the meaning of our lives comes from our connection with each other and with place. And so I'm talking about the way our relationship, our lives together, were connected to certain places, and how there's something survives even afterwards. So even after somebody has left us, the place that we were with them is still significant. And so the kind of things that we would talk about as we were going around was, well, we were both very inquisitive about what we were looking at. We would reminisce about our relationships. Things would occur to us like there's a part of Melbourne, South Melbourne, for example, which has a lot of Irish history. Lynn was from an Irish family, so that gives me an opportunity to talk about her history, her connection to Ireland. And there was a place we went to in Brunswick. We visited a particular Italian restaurant. We'd spent some time together living in Italy, so that's a chance for me to introduce a kind of memoir piece about when we were living in Italy together. So the book is kind of, it is a travelogue, but it's also a memoir. It's about loss and grief. It's also about memory and renewal.
Indeed. And where will you walk next, Nick? What's next on the massive walking project list for you?
Well, I don't exactly have another massive project, but I do still enjoy going out into the suburban streets. And now we have restrictions have lifted in Melbourne. We're able to do that. And so I'll probably continue walking on a fairly ad hoc kind of basis. But I think a lot of people have discovered over the past few months since we've been locked down in Melbourne, that actually there is a lot to see in your local streets. And a lot of people have actually got in touch with me and said, hey, you know, I've been walking around my local streets within my 5 kilometres or then within my 25 kilometres. And there's a lot you can see. You can uncover stories anywhere. And that's kind of another thing I want to encourage through the book is the idea to see that the idea that there are stories everywhere. The city has many layers. And it's good to be curious about that and go out and just see what you can find.
Yeah, a lot of people discovered their little local alleyways and cobbled areas, didn't they? Because, you know, you got sick of the streets after a while. Let's explore the innards as well. It was a really interesting time. Nick, thank you so much for sharing some of your stories with us today on Life Matters.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure here for us too. Nick Gadd, author of Melbourne Circle, Walking, Memory and Loss. And I just want to share with you a beautiful sentence from Nick in the book. He talks about the conversations he and Lynn used to have while they were walking. And he says, I wish I could remember more of those conversations, but they're gone now, spent like loose change in the days we assumed we'd have plenty more. This is Life Matters on Radio National.